This program is based on the book For Men of Understanding by Harum Yahya. Migration and Orientation in Animals, Birds and Monarch Butterflies. There are many migratory animals in nature. Birds, butterflies, turtles, salmon, and eels are but a few of them. The distances these animals travel during migration may be thousands, even tens of thousands of kilometers. Migration requires enormous amounts of energy. At times, birds fly thousands of kilometers without landing at all. Furthermore, migrating animals do not always enjoy favorable weather conditions. Although these tiny living things have to struggle against rain, storms, and other similar hardships, they manage to reach their destinations. Before proceeding to discuss bird migration, some considerations of the concept of orientation in living things will provide us with a better understanding of the subject. Navigation refers to the series of methods employed to plot a route to reach a destination. This definition already embodies the meticulously planned nature of migration. When one considers thousands of birds in a flock migrating in perfect harmony, it becomes more comprehensible that enormous skills must be required for such a planned movement. The question is, how did birds acquire these skills? It is evident that birds cannot themselves devise these intelligent tactics. The nature of these skills is better understood when compared to with those of human beings. A comparison will provide a better understanding of the issue. Imagine that a man, all alone and completely unequipped, sets off on a trip of 5,000 kilometers. During the course of this trip, any answer he might give to any question regarding his position and direction without the help of a compass, map, or similar apparatus would merely be an estimate. One can never reach one's destination based on estimated figures alone, and in the event this man gets lost, he will never be able to pinpoint his position. In the case of birds, however, we are not talking about a distance of 100 to 200 kilometers. Unlike birds or other migratory animals, man cannot, unaided, navigate an accurate route covering thousands of kilometers. Indeed, he is even likely to lose his way even when he goes to a different neighborhood. What kinds of things does man need to find his way? If he does not have any equipment, then by observing the location of the stars or looking at the plants turning to the sun, he can make a general estimation of his position. This is, however, only possible if he knows how to interpret his observations. Even so, he can never attain 100% accuracy in his conclusions. For a definite result, he certainly needs specific apparatus like a map or a compass, which may still prove to be insufficient in certain cases. Today, technological breakthroughs in navigation have enabled precision in this field. For instance, a global positioning system called GPS makes use of satellites in navigation. The GPS system provides precise determination of a receiver's position on Earth through signals sent by specific satellites in orbit around the Earth. The GPS system yields rapid and reliable results, since it operates via satellites. By the same token, birds can achieve fast and accurate results in navigation. That birds innately accomplish these operations, which for humans are only achievable with the support of advanced technology, is utterly amazing. It is obvious that the navigational abilities of birds are specifically given to them so that they can migrate. Why do birds migrate? How do they make very long distance flights without ever getting lost? And what determines the timing of migration? All these questions are among the issues for which even today science fails to provide an answer. Formerly, it was thought that birds migrate on account of seasonal changes. That is to say, some scientists claim that once there was no migration, but that some changes in the seasons brought it about. However, migration is by no means a phenomenon which could be carried out on a sudden decision. It requires special skills like orientation, food storage, and the ability to fly for long periods. It is impossible for an animal not possessing these characteristics to transform into a migratory animal. Not surprisingly, experiments addressing this issue have revealed that migration is unrelated to any seasonal changes, and that it is merely a component of the established ecological equilibrium of the Earth. One of the experiments carried out to address this issue was the following. Garden nightingales were subjected to experiments in a lab where internal conditions such as temperature and light could be varied. Internal conditions were arranged differently from external conditions. For instance, if it was winter outside, a spring climate was created in the laboratory to match the migration seasons. Under these conditions, scientists anticipated that the birds would organize themselves for migration. The birds stored fat for fuel, just as they do when the time for migration approaches. Although the birds organized themselves according to the artificial season and prepared themselves as if they were going to migrate, they did not set out to migrate before it was time. They observed the season outside and did not migrate. Considering the behavior of these birds, some questions occur, such as, what makes birds decide on migration? And what are the factors involved in determining the time for migration? According to evolutionists, living things have body clocks that help them to know the time in a closed environment and to differentiate seasonal changes. They maintain that birds behave in compliance with this body clock. They decide to immigrate when this clock rings. At this point, many questions arise. What is the origin of this clock? In what part of the body is it located? Is this body clock the same in every living thing? What would happen if this clock were out of order or ran slow? In this case, would birds simply stop migrating? No, such problems never occur in birds' migration, nor does this clock ever go out of order. This is simply because such a clock does not exist. It is actually not an imaginary clock that makes the birds determine the time of migration, but the system God created for them. Birds consume great energy in flight. They need more fuel than all sea-dwelling and land-dwelling animals. They obtain this energy through quite different methods. For instance, prior to migration, migratory birds prepare themselves and start to store fat in their bodies. Some species of bird fly longer distances than others. For these species, simply storing fat may not be sufficient. In such cases, they find another solution and meet their energy needs by resting at certain intervals. Terns, which distances from pole to pole, are a good example of this. They cover 30 to 40,000 kilometers during their migration. Which methods do terns use to store energy so that they can fly 30,000 kilometers? To see how these birds deal with the energy problems, scientists observed them for long periods of time. Their researchers led to the conclusion that, besides storing fat, terns also save energy by landing on floating icebergs. The techniques employed by birds to minimize energy consumption during migration are not limited to these alone. Using different flight techniques, some migratory birds reduce their energy consumption to zero. For instance, storks go up as high as 2,000 meters with rising warm air currents and then glide along swiftly to the next warm air current without beating their wings. A similar flight technique is used by albatrosses. These birds, which spend 92% of their lives above the sea, have wingspans of up to 3.5 meters. The most important characteristic of albatrosses is their flight style. They can fly for hours without beating their wings at all. To do so, they glide along in the air, keeping their wings open by making use of the wind. One point deserves consideration at this stage. It requires a great deal of energy to keep wings 3.5 meters across constantly open. A comparison will help to clarify the huge energy requirement. A man can hardly keep his arms open for a few minutes. Albatrosses, however, can stay in this position for hours. This is due to the special anatomical system they are bestowed with from the moment of their birth. During flight, the wings of the albatross are blocked. Therefore, it does not need to use any muscular power. Wings are lifted only by muscle layers. This greatly helps the bird during its flight. By means of this special design that albatrosses possess from birth, they can fly without any difficulty. Flying for hours by making exclusive use of the wind provides an unlimited energy source. For instance, a 10-kilo albatross loses only 1% of its body weight when it travels for 1,000 kilometers. This is indeed a very small amount. Men have manufactured gliders taking albatrosses as a model, and by making use of their fascinating flight technique. While covering long distances, albatrosses make use of the best wind positions. In the face of counter-air currents, they prefer to fly at low altitudes above regions where winds are blocked by mountains, hills, and trees. To make use of the wind pushing from behind, they go up to high altitudes where winds are strong. Albatrosses fly in perfect harmony with the wind. Another flight technique used by flocks of birds is the V-type flight formation. In this technique, big strong birds at the front function as shields against counter-air currents and lead the way for the weaker ones. With such an organization, a saving of 23% is achieved in the flock in general. Employing such flight techniques for the purpose of saving energy requires considerable knowledge of the laws of aerodynamics. However, these creatures that employ these techniques are only birds. It is unlikely that they can make such plans and devise such complicated mechanisms by their own wisdom and willpower. At this point, we face an obvious truth. The one who commands them to behave so by designing them in their most perfect fashion is God, the possessor of all knowledge. Flying demands a lot of skills and many conditions in addition to those so far described. Some migratory birds fly at very high altitudes. For instance, geese can fly at an altitude of 8,000 meters. Have you ever thought how these birds manage to breathe at such high altitudes? Normally, at such high altitudes, even breathing becomes impossible for a human being, let alone a difficult task like flying. For flights at high altitudes, it is necessary for man to employ artificial aids to enable him to breathe. For instance, in aeroplanes, special pressure systems balancing interior pressure have to be installed. Climbers, on the other hand, can only climb to high altitudes such as Mount Everest with the help of oxygen masks. Birds, however, can fly in these altitudes without any problems, which is most difficult for man. That is because birds' lungs, which are already equipped with very special respiratory systems, are created in such a way as to enable them to fly at high altitude. Another subject that arouses interest regarding birds is how they are unaffected by storms. It is true that birds are often unaffected by storms because they stay away from stormy regions. But, while flying fast, how do they sense a storm breaking out way ahead of them? Some ornithologists who carried out research into birds' sense of hearing observed that some birds can hear sounds of extremely small frequencies which diffuse to great distances in the atmosphere. Migratory birds can therefore hear a storm breaking out over a faraway mountain or thunder over an ocean hundreds of kilometers ahead and change their route to avoid an approaching storm. Due to all these characteristics, birds can migrate to very distant regions. As we mentioned earlier, migratory birds are very knowledgeable about their destinations and reach them without any confusion. But how do they accomplish this? For example, a pigeon flies 1,500 kilometers to return to its nest with no difficulty at all. Furthermore, it does not matter whether this journey takes place in the daytime or at night, since pigeons are equipped with the world's best quality compass. Birds have seemingly advanced magnetic receptor systems enabling them to find their way by making use of the Earth's magnetic field. As is known, the Earth has a magnetic field. The direction of this magnetic field is the same anywhere on Earth, but its intensity changes depending on the region. While determining their direction, pigeons can measure both the magnetic direction and intensity of the area they fly over with their natural compasses. They can even perceive a 2% variation in the Earth's magnetic field. Scientists do not have a complete understanding of the structure of this compass. In fact, where this compass lies within the bird's body remains a mystery. Based on subsequent research, it is assumed that a gland located in the midbrain controls this system. But how is this piece of flesh, weighing only a few grams, able to measure the Earth's magnetic field? Let's look at the phenomenon of flight from a more scientific viewpoint. There exists in a bird's brain a central nervous system for orientation. This system informs the bird of the direction towards which it has to beat its wings. The question is, can birds possess such a complicated system just through coincidence? Did birds delay their migration until this system had coincidentally formed? Certainly, the formation of such a complicated system as a result of a series of coincidences is logically and scientifically implausible. Moreover, it is also unlikely that birds waited for millions of years for this so-called coincidental formation of a system so vitally important to them. That is because birds which are unequipped with such a system cannot migrate, and even if they attempted to migrate, being unable to find their direction and facing severe weather conditions, they would soon die and become extinct. Such a flawless system, which could by no means have been formed by coincidences, has been given to these living things by their Creator, the one who creates them from nothing with their flawless and excellent structure and equips them with all these perfect traits. This fact is related in the Quran as follows. He is God, the Creator, the Maker, the Giver of form. To Him belong the most beautiful names. Everything in the heavens and earth glorifies Him. He is the Almighty, the All-Wise. Surah 59, verse 24. Subsequent research regarding how birds find their way gave rise to numerous questions. Even today's technology fails to explain the mechanisms through which navigational systems in birds operate. Basing the origin of these perfectly operating systems on the random mechanisms and coincidences of the theory of evolution would be a most unwise thing to do. The theoreticians of evolution, who are unable to explain how even a single feather came into existence, cannot offer any explanation for the miraculous natural compass inherent in birds. All research into living things reveals hundreds of delicately planned, flawlessly designed traits. All of these lead to a truth that every reasonable person can easily recognize. This is the fact that no trait peculiar to any existing living thing can ever come into existence by chance. As we dwell on the details of structures and traits in living things, we will see that they are composed of interrelated, meticulously planned, orderly, and complex systems. It becomes obvious that the evolutionist scenario asserting that coincidences gave rise to these systems by adding new components to them over time is improbable. Let us outline what we have related so far. Migratory birds can, all alone, overcome many difficulties which seem to be impossible under normal conditions. While doing this, the only thing they make use of is the perfect technology they intrinsically possess in their bodies. This is high technology indeed. It ensures that the bird flying at very high altitude does not die of oxygen deficiency, get tired of beating its wings across a route of thousands of kilometers and drop down into the middle of the ocean, or become confused while migrating from one hemisphere to another, while helping it to hear a breaking storm far away and change direction. Migration is specially designed for birds, and it has been practiced by them for millions of years. But it is not only birds that have amazing migration stories. The migration story of monarch butterflies, which live in southeast Canada, is even more complex than that of the birds. Monarch butterflies normally live for only 5 to 6 weeks after they develop from the caterpillar. 4 generations of monarch butterflies live within 1 year. 3 of these 4 generations live in the spring and summertime. With the coming of autumn, the situation changes. Migration starts in autumn, and the generation that migrates lives much longer than the other generations that lived in the same year. Those monarchs that migrate are the 4th generation of that year. Indeed, the monarchs that migrate to the south live 6 months longer than the previous generations. They need to live this long to complete their journey and return. Interestingly enough, the migration starts exactly on the night of the autumn equinox. The butterflies that go south do not disperse after they pass across the Tropic of Cancer and leave the cold weather behind. After migrating over half the American continent, millions of butterflies settle down in the middle of Mexico. Here, the ridges of volcanic mountains are covered with a great variety of flora. Located at a height of 3,000 meters, this place is warm enough for the butterflies to survive. For a period of 4 months, from December to March, they eat nothing. The fat stored in their bodies nourishes them, and they only drink water. Flowers that bloom in the spring are very important for the monarchs. After a 4-month fast, they first give themselves a nectar feast in the spring. They now have stored enough energy to return to North America. This generation, which lives a 2-month lifespan extended to 8 months, is no different from the 3 earlier generations in other respects. They mate at the end of March before setting out on their journey. At the equinox, the colony starts flying back north. Soon after they complete their journey and arrive in Canada, they die. However, before they die, they give birth to a new generation, which is necessary for the perpetuation of the species. The newly born generation is the first generation of the year and lives for about 1.5 months. Then come the second and third generations. When it comes to the fourth generation, migration starts over again. This generation will live 6 months longer than the others, and the chain will continue in the same way. This interesting system provokes many questions. How is it that the fourth of every four generations lives 6 months longer? How does this long-lived generation always coincide with winter, and how has it done so for thousands of years? How do these butterflies always start migrating at the equinox? And how do they attune themselves so sensitively, or are they using a calendar? There is no doubt that there are no answers to these questions to be found through evolution or other variants on that theory. The butterflies must have borne these interesting characteristics from the time they first came into existence. If the first fourth generation of monarchs on Earth did not have the trait of living so long, then all the butterflies would have died that winter, and the species would have become extinct. Monarchs must have borne this extraordinary characteristic from the time they were created. Coincidences unquestionably do not have the power to arrange the generations of the animal according to its migration pattern. On the other hand, it is also unlikely that the butterflies themselves decided to make their fourth generations live longer and arrange their metabolisms, DNA, and genes accordingly. It is obvious enough that monarchs have been created with this trait. It is God, the possessor of all knowledge, all power, the Almighty, who has created the birds in the sky, the ants on the ground, giraffes, lions, in brief, all the living things on earth and inspired them with their individual tasks. By displaying the astonishing traits he created in living beings to man, God commands man to ponder them. In the 41st verse of Surah 24, God states as follows, "Do you not see that everyone in the heavens and earth glorifies God, as do the birds with their outspread wings? Each one knows its prayer and glorification. God knows what they do." This program is based on the book For Men of Understanding by Harum Yahya. Self-sacrifice in living things. Living beings have to reproduce to continue their species. However, reproduction by itself often proves insufficient, because if living things fail to provide adequate care for their offspring, the newborn cannot survive. In other words, if living things did not feel the need to protect and look after their offspring and did not do this successfully, newborn creatures would not be able to look after themselves and would soon die. When we look at nature, we see the majority of living things displaying amazing self-sacrifice in order to protect and provide the best care for their offspring, incomparable to any form of sacrifice shown by human beings. Furthermore, these living things risk their lives for their young without a moment's hesitation. So, how did such self-sacrifice in animals develop? Evolutionists claim that self-sacrifice displayed by living things, especially that shown towards their offspring, is instinctive behavior. What then does the word instinct mean? Evolutionists define instinct as a sense of intuition inherent in living things. They claim that an inner voice whispers to a spider, a bird, a lion, or a tiny insect to practice self-sacrifice to keep the generations going. In reply to a question regarding the source of this voice, they desperately say, Mother Nature. In the view of evolutionists, every phenomenon in nature is a miracle of nature. However, it is evident that this claim is futile and meaningless because nature itself is already a created entity consisting of the stones, flowers, trees, rivers, and mountains familiar to all of us. It is obvious that these entities cannot come together to furnish a living being with a new trait, which is a product of intelligence. As a matter of fact, even Darwin himself was aware of this logical failure from the very beginning. In his book, The Origin of Species, which he wrote in 1859, he expressed his self-doubt about his own theory in the following words. So wonderful an instinct as that of the hive bee making its cell will probably have occurred to many readers as a difficulty sufficient to overthrow my whole theory. Research conducted by scientists on living things has revealed that they live in an astounding harmony, coordination, and collaboration with one another. Wherever one turns in nature, one is likely to see examples of this. For instance, some little birds utter a shrill alarm call when they see a bird of prey like a hawk or eagle approaching their flock to warn their companions of the danger. Thus, they attract the attention of the attacker to themselves. This behavior considerably reduces the chances of survival of the bird who sounded the alarm. But despite this, the bird puts its own life at risk for the hundreds of other birds in the flock. A majority of animals undertake all kinds of self-sacrifice for their young. For example, the incubation period of penguins is during the polar winter. Female penguins lay one egg, leave incubation to the males, and return to the sea. During the 4 months of incubation, the male penguin has to resist violent polar storms at times reaching speeds of 120 kilometers per hour. Making great sacrifices for 4 full months without leaving the egg, the male penguin loses half of its body weight because it has no chance of going hunting. Although it goes without any food for months, it does not go hunting and resists the violent storms without ever leaving the egg. After the end of the 4 months, the female penguin shows up with a huge store of food. She has not wasted time in the meantime, but has worked for her young and stored food for it. She empties her stomach and takes over the job of caring for the young. Various examples of self-sacrifice are to be seen in nature. For instance, an African bird, known as the horned bird, first finds a hole in a tree in which to build its nest. When the female bird settles in this hole, the male covers the entrance with mud. At this point, they do not forget one important detail. The male horned bird leaves a small window in the mud wall constructed to ensure the security of the female and the young. In this way, it protects them from any deadly external threat, and especially from snakes. Moreover, through this small window, the male bird feeds the female who has no chance to collect food because she is incubating the eggs. The male bird will feed the young through the same hole when they hatch. The self-sacrificing behavior bombus bees display in making their nest is also very interesting. When the time for laying eggs approaches, the young queen starts looking for a suitable location to form a colony. Once the right place is found, she then moves on to find feathers, weeds, and leaves, which are essential materials for building the nest. First, She builds a little chamber the size of a tennis ball in the midst of the nest by putting together the materials she collected. If these materials are wet, the queen dries them with the heat produced by her own body. When this operation is over, she starts supplying food to the nest. After collecting enough nectar and pollen, she returns to the nest and discharges them in the middle of the chamber. Meanwhile, the bee does not throw out the inedible part of the nectar. She dries it and uses it as an adhesive for attaching the materials together and in the insulation of the chamber. Feeding on nectar, the queen soon starts to secrete beeswax. The queen makes little mounds from the collected nectar and on top of them lays 8 to 16 eggs, which will soon grow to become the first worker bees of the nest. Then she firmly covers the eggs all around with pollens from flowers. The feeding of the newly hatched young is also very important. To do this, the young queen shapes beeswax into honey pots and fills them with nectar. When the young emerge from their eggs after an incubation period of 4 or 5 days, they start to feed on the pollen and nectar prepared specially for them. It is noteworthy that this is not a man with consciousness and wisdom, but a tiny bee, no bigger than a few centimeters long, who uses nectar just like a construction worker. At this point, the immediate question that comes to mind is why the queen shows such self-sacrifice. After all, the queen receives no benefit in return for her generous efforts, but merely gets exhausted. So, what actually is it that makes her display so much self-sacrifice and spend so much energy to breed new generations? The answer is obvious. Just like all other creatures, the Bombus bees show self-sacrifice only because they are inspired to do so by God. It is worthy of note that as opposed to man's disinclination to offer any sacrifice in the absence of any benefit to himself, even the tiniest living beings display such self-sacrificing behavior. God summons people to ponder upon animals and take heed of them in the 21st verse of Surah 23, saying, "There is certainly a lesson for you in your livestock." The care and protection for its offspring provided by the python, one of the most frightening and dangerous animals on earth, is quite a striking example. The female python lays around 100 eggs. Just after laying them, she wraps herself over the eggs. This is purposeful behavior. If, in midday, the weather is too hot, the female python cools the eggs by shading them. If the temperature drops considerably, then she vibrates her body to warm the eggs. The care provided by the crocodile, a particularly savage animal, for its offspring is, like that of the female python, quite astounding. First, the crocodile digs a hole for the incubation of its eggs. The temperature of the hole must never rise above 30 degrees centigrade. A slight rise in temperature would threaten the lives of the offspring and the eggs. The crocodile takes care that the holes in which it places its eggs are located in rather shady places and goes to extraordinary efforts to keep the eggs at a constant temperature. Some crocodile species build nests of weeds on cold water. If the temperature of the nest still rises despite these measures, then the crocodile cools the nest by sprinkling urea on it. The time when the eggs hatch is most important, because in the event the crocodile failed to hear the noises coming from the nest, the young would be suffocated. The mother crocodile brings the eggs out and helps the offspring out of their eggs by using her teeth as tweezers. The crocodile, with her razor-sharp teeth, avoids the slightest movement likely to injure her young. The safest place for the newly born is the protective pouch in its mother's mouth, which is specially designed to shelter half a dozen newly born crocodiles. The meticulous care and concern a wild animal like the crocodile shows its offspring is only one of the examples proving the invalidity of the evolutionist claim of the struggle for life, which maintains that the strong survive while the others are defeated and disappear. We can provide further examples of self-sacrifice in animals. The megapode bird living in Pacific Islands is one of these. During the summer season, the female megapode lays one egg every 6 days. The eggs of the megapode are relatively big compared to its own size, being almost as big as an ostrich egg. For this reason, the female megapode can only incubate one egg at a time. Therefore, every 6 days, the newly hatched eggs are in danger of dying owing to lack of warmth. However, the megapode solves this problem by manufacturing an incubation machine. The male megapode is created with the ability to manufacture an incubation machine by using the most abundant materials in nature, that is, sand and earth. For this purpose, 6 months before the breeding season arrives, the male megapode starts to dig a hole 5 meters in diameter and 1 meter in depth with its gigantic claws. Then it fills the hole with wet weeds and leaves. The main purpose is to use the heat produced by the bacteria in decaying plants to warm the eggs. However, additional arrangements have to be made for this process to take place. The actual reason why the plants decay and release heat is the funnel-shaped hole made by the megapode in the pile of plants. This hole enables rainwater to leak into the nest and keep the organic matter wet. Because of the damp, decay takes place in the plants beneath the sand, and heat is released. Soon before spring, the male begins to air the decayed plant layer. This is to maintain the heat balance. The female bird occasionally visits the hole and checks whether the male is working or not. Finally, the female lays eggs on the sand over the decayed plants. For the development of offspring in the incubation machine, the temperature should be kept constant at 33 degrees centigrade. In order to achieve this, the male megapode regularly measures the temperature of the sand with his beak, which is as sensitive as a thermometer. If necessary, he opens ventilation holes to reduce the temperature. It is so careful that if a few handfuls of earth are thrown on the sand, the male megapode immediately removes the extra sand with his feet and prevents even the slightest change in temperature. The offspring come into the world under protective measures such as these. The newly born are so developed that they can fly just a few hours after they emerge from their eggs. No doubt, why the megapode bird embarks on such a difficult task to protect the eggs is another question. The only answer is hidden in the desire God has given living things to reproduce and protect their young. The dolphin is another animal known for its self-sacrificing behavior. Dolphins raise their offspring with great care from the moment they are born. As soon as the newborn dolphin is born, it has to go up to the surface of the water for oxygen. To provide this, the mother dolphin shows amazingly conscious behavior and, using the tip of her nose, gently pushes the offspring above the surface of the water. Just before birth, the movements of the mother dolphin slow down considerably. For this reason, two other females always accompany the mother dolphin during birth. Always remaining on either side of the mother, the assistant dolphins assume the responsibility of protecting her from possible attacks by sharks that might be attracted by the smell of blood. Self-sacrificing behavior in animals is not limited to a few examples. Birds, for instance, go through an extremely careful and sensitive phase during incubation. While the eggshell hardens during incubation, the female bird remains still for a few hours so as not to harm this process. This behavior deserves special attention, indeed, since the animal senses the moment and stands still not to spoil it. Furthermore, to ensure the healthy development of the egg, the bird feeds on calcium-rich nutrients. All these are planned actions for the well-being of the offspring. Animals are aware of the needs of their offspring. However, it is obvious that animals cannot possess any knowledge of health or biology. How can this instinct, defined by evolutionists as a drive observed in animals but not completely understood, guide animals to become civil engineers while building their nests, perfect soldiers while protecting their young or colonies, and turn even the most aggressive species into compassionate and gentle creatures towards their young? Moreover, what kind of a drive is it which does not allow living things to drift into imperfection, neglectfulness, or indolence? Quite the contrary, it establishes obedience, discipline, determination, and perfect harmony among them. Indeed, Darwin also had difficulties in answering this query, which he himself put forward. He often left related questions unanswered too. In his book, The Origin of Species, he asks the following questions. Thirdly, can instincts be acquired and modified through natural selection? What shall we say to so marvelous an instinct as that which leads the bee to make cells, which have practically anticipated the discoveries of profound mathematicians? Anyone who makes a simple observation of living things and ponders upon them will clearly see that this behavior displayed by animals is not caused by the animals themselves, and it is unlikely that they could spontaneously develop by chance. The cause of this behavior displayed by animals lies neither in their own bodies nor in nature. It is obvious that an invisible source of wisdom and power keeps the behavior of these animals under control and directs them. This wisdom and power is God, the Lord of the heavens and the earth and everything in between, and the possessor of infinite mercy and compassion. Darwin, who was an amateur biologist, faced another difficulty as he thought over the traits of living things in nature. Darwin had based the mechanism of life in nature on the principle of the survival of the fittest. According to this reasoning, since the most important condition of survival was struggle, the sole criterion for all living things to exist was to be ruthless and self-centered, even to the extent of sacrificing one's own offspring and mate. According to Darwin, this system of nature was established on the dominance of the strong over the weak. In other words, a living thing evolved to possess superior characteristics and managed to survive in this way only. This mechanism, called natural selection, formed the basis of Darwin's theory. However, as Darwin continued to examine living things, he found he was unable to answer a great number of questions which occurred to him about the claims he himself had put forward. The living creatures he observed in nature did not fight in order to survive, but on the contrary, displayed extremely self-sacrificing behavior parallel to those we have related so far. This astounding behavior of living things definitely put the theory of evolution, which lacks any scientific basis, at a great disadvantage. If, as Darwin maintained, the weak and the unfit were destined to be eliminated in nature, and every individual only cared for its own life, then why did all living things put their lives at risk and spend so much time and energy on nurturing, raising, and protecting their young? This is a question to which evolutionists fail to give consistent answers. Indeed, Professor Dr. Cemal Yıldırım, who is shown as a reference by many evolutionists in Turkey, confessed his doubts on natural selection in his book, The Theory of Evolution and Bigotry. However, natural selection has never stopped being a subject of controversy from various aspects, both when it was first proposed and today. Apart from theologians, we know that some biologists too do not find evolution a satisfactory explanation for this order. John Maynard Smith, himself a leading evolutionist, expresses the deadlock evolutionists have run into in the New Scientist magazine. He asks the question that if evolution occurs by the selection of the features that guarantee the individual's chance of survival and reproduction, then how are they, as evolutionists, going to account for the self-sacrificing and cooperative behavior of living things? As this evolutionist confesses, it is not possible to explain the behavior of animals with the theory of evolution. The incredible care living things, which are devoid of wisdom, the faculty to judge, conceive, and reason, show to one another, as well as the extraordinary intelligent plans and designs through which they manifest their concern for one another, has one single explanation. These living things are acting in compliance with the inspiration given to them from the moment they came into existence. They lead their lives under the command and control of their Lord, the one who has created them. This fact is stated in the 56th verse of Surah 11. There is no creature he does not hold by the forelock. This is the mystery behind the extraordinary characteristics of living things. The concept of self-sacrifice is a great stumbling block for Darwin, who erected his theory on purely atheist grounds. It also shakes the fallacy of natural selection to its very roots, which Darwin fiercely defended. Darwin himself observed these examples of self-sacrifice in living things, so could he disregard them? In his book, The Origin of Species, Darwin repeats over and over again that he is aware that this fact of self-sacrifice deals a great blow to his theory. The explanation provided for this problem by the amateur biologist makes it clear what kind of a scientist he was. Darwin says in his book, "Finally, it may not be a logical deduction, but to my imagination it is far more satisfactory to look at such instincts as the young cuckoo ejecting its foster brothers, ants making slaves, the larvae of ichneumonidae feeding within the live bodies of caterpillars, not as specially endowed or created instincts, but as small consequences of one general law leading to the advancement of all organic beings, namely, multiply, vary, let the strongest live and the weakest die." As seen, Darwin's thoughts on natural selection are quite precise. Although Darwin himself confesses that natural selection is not a reasonable explanation, the majority of evolutionists still insist on adhering to this fallacy. Events which take place in one's imagination can by no means be considered scientific evidence. Human beings sometimes imagine things that have never happened or never will happen. Or those who are totally divorced from the facts, like Darwin, may remain under the influence of things they would like to be true. Yet every human being who observes nature with a clear consciousness sees that living things are not brutal, tough, or uncompassionate because of the so-called struggle for life. On the contrary, living beings are self-sacrificing because of the inspiration their Creator bestowed upon them. as expressed in the 68th verse of Surah 16, which says, "Your Lord revealed to bees, God, the Lord of the heavens and the earth and everything in between, the infinitely compassionate and oft-forgiving, has control over all living things. Their instincts, which Darwin was unable to explain within the scope of evolution, are actually the inspiration given by God to all living things. All life in nature is created by God. All living things come into being by the will of God and behave in compliance with His inspiration. The self-sacrificing behavior, kindness, and care living beings display towards their young are merely the reflection of God's name, the Compassionate. This is revealed in the 7th verse of Surah 16. Your Lord is all gentle, most merciful. This program is based on the book For Men of Understanding by Harum Yahya.